Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live. This show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live, Nancy and Lisa.
Hi, everyone. Nancy, it's time for Chit Chat Cafe Live. Oh, it's a great time to unwind and enjoy some chit chat with us. We're thrilled. Tonight, our guests are Mary McDonough. She's best known for her role as Erin Walton on the hit TV series, The Waltons. And she's also an advocate, and we are just very supportive of her. We're joined also by Taya Kyle, the wife of Chris Kyle, author of American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history. We're glad to celebrate our first show with all of you in Chit Chat Cafe Live. It's the new year, and we're excited to be with you. And we're thanking all who serve our country tonight, as well as their spouses. Lisa, how are you?
Well, I'm going a little crazy. My son leaves for Spain tomorrow to study abroad for 4 months. So it's less than 24 hours before he leaves, and we're just packing. And my son's as bad as I am. He's bringing 8 pairs of shoes. He has 10 pairs of jeans. And we have to fit all this into one suitcase, okay, with 4 jackets, a coat, shirts, underwear, socks. In one suitcase, this all has to fit. So a friend of my sister suggested those space bags. Did you ever use those?
I use them a lot. I love them. And you know what you need to get them used to? Maybe closing them with rolling the air out, because he might not have access to a vacuum cleaner to suck the air out.
What do you mean? To open it, you need to suck the air out?
No. To close it, a lot of people use their vacuum cleaner to suck the air out. But when he's in Spain and he needs to return...
Oh, well, I'm not worried. He could roll everything out of a ball at that point.
Okay. I love those airbags. Anything you can do to compartmentalize and make your packing easier.
Yeah, so that's been all my doing for the last, you know, few hours.
Yeah. But you know what else I believe, too? If you start with his belt or two belts, and you lined the suitcase inside with the belt, and then shove socks and underwear into shoes so there's no empty space.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Every little space is used. Because, you know, I'm just the packing queen.
You are the packing queen. You put everything into a little teeny bag. You would die right now if you saw what he was taking.
Oh. And
right,
the
and
fun part,
really,
I know.
Like you. My husband's
I know
like
you, Lisa. Guess what, everyone at Chit Chat Cafe Live? Lisa's trying to hurry and get it done before her husband, Bud, who's also a great packer, sees everything, because he's going to start saying no, no, no.
Oh, it's a comedy. We have 5 space bags. So I'm telling my son, shove them all in before Daddy gets home. Shove them all in, and we're going to vacuum to suck the air out before Daddy gets home, because Daddy's going to make you take some of these shirts and not make you take them. So as
exactly.
Many as you can shove in the bag before he gets home, let's do it, and we'll just put it in the suitcase.
That's so funny. But, hey, let me be the first to say, Lisa has a wonderful husband. He'd give his shirt to anyone, especially his family. But he packs like I pack. No to this.
Oh.
You don't need that. Just take these 3 things.
Yeah, he's very, 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 what's the word?
Careful.
I like options.
Yeah.
I like my options when I travel.
Well, we can't wait to have your son, Joe, as our guest on Chit Chat Cafe Live when he returns to tell us all about his adventures in Spain.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I'm like, don't get in any trouble. Don't do anything stupid. You don't want to end up in a Spanish jail. You know, he won't. He's a good boy, but you never know. His kids do stupid things, but hopefully it'll all go well.
Yep.
I keep crying.
I can tell. I know. And you had the fabulous Bon Voyage party last night.
Yeah. It's exciting. Aww. It's an exciting adventure for him.
Lisa, you and I always talk about, you know, Lisa and I have known each other since we were 18. And we always talk about, oh, don't you wish it was back to the simpler times? Remember when our kids were little?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tonight we're taking it way back to simpler times, to the Waltons. Didn't you love that show?
Yeah.
Aw, I never missed an episode, and you know what I love? They tackled a lot of important issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was proud.
Good night, John Boy.
Yeah, good night.
Well, we'd like to introduce our first guest. We have Mary McDonough, who played Erin Walton. Welcome, Mary.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. This is quite the honor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So tell us what you've been doing with yourself since the Walton days.
Oh, wow. Let me see. The last 30 years. Well, I continue to act. I have become an activist for women's health issues in Washington, D.C. I was diagnosed with lupus. And I've become a public speaker and certified life coach and workshop leader about body image issues and self-esteem and communication. And I wrote a book, which, of course, Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Erin Walton. And all of the lessons that I learned kind of really took me back, like you said, going back to, you know, a simpler time or where our foundations lie. And I realized that a lot of my learning and a lot of my real solid foundation came from the lessons I learned from my McDonough family as well as my Walton family. So I kind of like, you know, looking at it all and looking back and realizing about those simpler times, and they're very healing in a way.
Now, tell us what you're an advocate for. You said you have lupus. Was it because you had breast implants or something? Is that what I read?
Oh, lots of things. So growing up in the show was great, and my book, you know, talks about funny stories behind the scenes and lovely memories of the cast and all the wonderful parts of the show. But it also, you know, deals with some of those struggles and challenges that I went through, a lot of it with body image issues, with what I look like and trying to be the perfect Erin all the time, the perfect grades, the perfect daughter, the perfect Erin Walton. And my image of the Erin was always supposed to be this pretty one, so I fell into, you know, that trap of, like, having to be perfect and look perfect and yo-yo dieting and then, you know, trying to fit into this unrealistic image that women are supposed to fit into in our society right now. And back then, nothing's changed too much, and so I had breast implants. And that was the biggest mistake for me ever. They ruptured in my chest and leaked through my system and triggered what I believe, and a lot of people will say I'm crazy, but it triggered an immune response, and so I ended up being diagnosed with lupus after 10 years of undiagnosed illnesses.
Oh, my God.
So I ended up, you know, what do? You try and make good lemonade, my dad always said. So I became an advocate in the public and in Washington, D.C. for women's health.
How did you know that they had leaked? Did you feel it?
No, there was no sign. An MRI and a mammogram and an ultrasound did not detect any of the leaking. It wasn't until my last resort was to think, well, I have to take away all the variables. I have to have these things out. So when I had them out, they were completely disintegrated.
Oh, my God. Isn't that awful?
It was pretty awful. It was pretty awful because I had been told, you know, oh, they'll last a lifetime. There's no problems. Nothing will ever happen. Of course, we know now that that is not true. So, you know, while I'm not anti-implant, it was a bad choice for me for emotional, personal, and physical reasons. But, you know, I just try and get the information out there so women can make an informed choice, because at the time I made the choice, that information wasn't available.
Well, let's get on to a happier subject. So tell us what it was like to be on The Waltons. I mean, that's an iconic show that people still talk about and still watch.
It was great. It's an honor to be part of the show. And I write about my lovely experiences and the funny things, the sad times, and the tough times. You know, we lost the grandfather on the show, and as people left, and we had wonderful guest stars on the show, and we have had a lot of fun on the show. And, you know, now our country's in this place where people are looking back to, I wish times were simpler. I wish, you know, we could go back. And while we can't go back, I think we can still learn a lot of lessons from the show. And I certainly have. And it was just a great thing to be part of. It brings me so many gifts in my life every day.
Do you still keep in contact with some of the
All the time. We were just on the Today Show. We just had a 40th anniversary. The show's 40th year is this year. So we are actually together a lot. We like to hang out, and our kids celebrate, you know, birthdays and bat mitzvahs together, and we actually see each other all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's neat.
We loved you on the Today Show.
Oh, you did? Thank you. I kept taking pictures of Matt Lauer, and he was like, you have to put the camera down, Mary.
And we've seen them on your website.
Yes, exactly. And then
you
I was actually sitting on my phone while during the interview.
Is he cute in person?
You know, he is. He was so nice. I was really happy because I watched the show all the time, so he was very, very fun. I thought he did a good job of trying to, you know, corral us all, because we get together and we're very loud and we laugh a lot.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So what, do you have children? You have a family?
I do. I have a merged family. I have two stepdaughters and a birth daughter. And we merged our family about 8 years ago. So, and a little toy poodle.
Any of them in acting?
No, oddly enough. I mean, they've toyed with it. One of my stepdaughters is, you know, theater. They all did theater. And my, you know, they kind of have enjoyed it, but no, none of them. My daughter always said, oh, why didn't you put me in acting? But I said, are you kidding me? She didn't want to do it when she was young. She wanted to play.
No, that's okay. That's good. Now, what made you decide to write a book? Was it kind of like a self-help for yourself, like some healing for you to write it, or?
Well, no, it actually opened up a lot of containers that I thought were really kind of securely shut, so it was a little bit interesting at the time. I do a lot of public speaking, and I have a workshop called Body Branding, Getting Comfortable with the Skin You're In, and I've spoken to so many groups and talked about women's health, and I do a lot of, you know, speaking and my workshops. People kept coming up to me afterwards and saying, do you have a book? You should really share this with more people. And a lot of books that have come out, you know, always talk about the dark side and the negative side. And I thought, well, I'll talk about my own lessons. I'm not going to throw anybody else under the bus. Mm-hmm. So, and I certainly have enough. I made enough mistakes. And I thought, well, why not write something that's positive and that maybe has, you know, the idea of coming out the other side of the mountain. So, you know, a lot of people have been disappointed. They want me to air dirty laundry, but I only aired my own. So it just seemed like at the right time. I also just turned 50.
It's kind of a milestone.
Yeah, so it seemed like I could actually write about it with some perspective. Mm-hmm. And certainly I kind of wrote it so people would know that we're not alone, and I've certainly, you know, realized that myself. I kept all of my fears secret and just kept striving for perfection, and I realized that everybody in the country felt exactly the same way I did and probably still does. And so sharing it was great for me, and I'm hoping that it will help people not make the same mistakes I did, but also not to feel so alone.
Well, we love the title of your book, Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Aaron Walton.
Thanks.
And the book cover is beautiful. You as darling little Aaron, and you grown up so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
But of course, my heart is racing right now as I share with all of our listeners a quote from George Clooney. Mary is a whole lot more than Aaron on the Waltons. This book shows how she's handled all the highs and lows with grace. Oh, my. What an honor.
Oh my
wow.
God.
I know. My heart's racing, too.
Yeah. I mean, my heart is really racing. How did you ask him? Did he just offer to write that?
Well, there's a story in the book about when I met George. I met him before he came to California to be an actor, and he was hanging around a movie set that I was on. And it was funny. We came back to California, and we missed him and said, George, you know, you should really come to California and try this acting thing. Who knows? So I've known him ever since, and I did ER and a couple of other shows that he did, and we did a play together. So I've known him, you know, since, you know, before he became really, really such a huge, bright star. And he's always been so gracious and so incredible that I just sent the book and said, hey, any chance I could get a quote?
Um, That is a beautiful quote.
It is. I'm very honored, and he's so amazing in the kind of work that he does to, you know, for everybody now in the world, that it's a great honor to have him do that for me.
Well, we agree, and we think you're wonderful too. So what was it like on ER? What was your character?
I actually played a woman who had lupus, who was getting a transplant from her brother. And Gabriel Mann, who's now on a revenge show, he played my brother, and it was funny because I auditioned for it and I got the part, and then when I was on the set, I told them, well, you know, I actually have this disease. And then after we finished, the Warner Brothers PR department called and said, hey, can we release to the press that we cast somebody who actually has the disease to play it? And I thought, oh, gosh, I've been sick for so long. I don't know if I want to go here. But I realized that in trying to make good lemonade, like my dad always said, that it was another step in that path. And I thought, okay, if it can help people, sure. And then began a huge involvement that I had with different lupus organizations in the country.
And that's wonderful, because I bet you're helping a lot of people.
I hope so. I mean, I hope so over the years. It's been, you know, lupus was, when I was first diagnosed, it took me 10 years, and I had doctors and health care. So a lot of women are told they're crazy. It's hard to diagnose. But now with House, you know, that's the first thing they rule out on that show. So
right.
Everybody's raised some public awareness about it. So hopefully what I did helped a little.
Yeah, my aunt has lupus.
Oh, does she?
So we are well of that and aware of it, and our prayers are with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what was it like on Will and Grace?
Oh, my gosh. It was a great show to do. They are so nice and so funny. And I did two episodes. And, oh, gosh, what a great experience just to sit and watch them be so funny.
They are hysterical every time we watch. We're laughing.
And nice, nice people.
Well, a lot of our Chit Chat Cafe Live listeners might not know, but we do because we read your website, that you wrote and directed For the Love of May, a film starring Patricia Neal, who was the original Mother Walton. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is correct. I did a short film based on a script that I wrote, which I'm still working on getting made into a long-form version. But I decided to do this short film and put it into film festivals, and I went to my Walton mothers. I went to Patricia Neal and asked her to play the part of Grammy May, a woman who gets a call 50 years later from the man that she always dreamed of being with, her lost love. And Michael Learned, my Walton mother, played her daughter.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Now, is there a way we could see it? Is it out?
Part of it is on my website, but marymcdonough.com. But I not the full-length version, no. It's not out there. I'm hoping to actually get it done now.
Okay. And did you enjoy writing? I can't even imagine writing something like that.
Oh, yeah. I've always written. It's one of the things that really saved me. There's a story in the book about John Ritter, who played the Reverend on our show. And he really helped save my life. I credit him with, because I was such an emotional teenager and hiding everything. And he saw through me and said, write a journal. I put everything in my journal. And I started journaling. So I've always written poems and stories. And I always loved writing. So when I started to direct and produce, it seemed natural for me to make it into screenplays, as well as writing a book. So.
Well, that's wonderful. It must have been, that's just so beautiful that you got to work with your Walton mothers.
Oh, it was amazing. And you know, to direct an Academy Award winner was very nerve-wracking, and a four-time Emmy Award winner. But they were my mamas, and they were lovely.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, I was very impressed with your work that you do with Sybil Knight and Goldrich.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our listeners don't really know perhaps some of the awareness with the FDA regarding, you know, the silicone. And you have a nice list of things to informed women. Would you like to cover a few of those things for our listeners?
Sure. Sybil is the grand dame of all the breast implant issues. She's a cancer survivor who ended up having five sets of faulty implants that just didn't work in her system, and she got sick as well. So when I didn't know what was wrong with me, and then people kept saying, well, there might be a link. And Sybil was very great in guiding me through that, and now for the last 17 years, we've worked together with Congress and lobbying as citizen activists and leading rallies and talking to the FDA and testifying. And basically what we've always wanted is to make sure that there was a safe implant, because right now there isn't one that lasts forever or that is that safe. It's sort of like, well, it's not going to hurt you that terribly, so we'll just let it be. And we always wanted a safe one. We didn't get it, but we're still working on it. But what women need to know is that they don't last a lifetime. You have to have them replaced. A lot of times, once you've had an implant, you will be disqualified for certain types of health coverage or health coverage at all. With mammography is a big issue. If you have a family history and to have early detection, an implant will mask the cancer at times. So a lot of times with implant, you need to have three different angles shot, which exposes you to more radiation or a specialist. And all towns don't have specialists that know how to shoot those three extra angles in a mammogram. And your insurance company doesn't often cover those angles. So you can be at risk, and you have to be careful. The FDA is now suggesting MRIs, which are not always or ever covered, and they can be $2,600 by your insurance company. And basically, just the symptoms of, being able to detect a rupture. If you have a saline implant with, obviously the water leaks out and you're flat so you can see it. But silicone always migrates out of the shell, and we don't know that silicone is inert. We don't know where it goes. It migrates through the body. It's been pulled out of women's lymph glands, kidneys, uterus, ovaries.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but once it gets there, we don't know what it does. And that was what the panel at the FDA hearings really wanted. Like, let's do this research. But the manufacturers haven't been held to the task of actually doing all of the long-term studies, and they've lost about 50 to 80% of the women they were studying. So women need to be careful and take their own bodies and their health into their own hands and, try and make informed choices.
Well, we applaud you for all of your work that you're doing to spread the word and to help educate women.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I feel very blessed to have come out of the other side of all of it, and I feel the only thing I really can do is give people the information so they can make their own choices and encourage them to, educate themselves.
I'm shocked. Nobody would know this, like for the mammographies and stuff like that. It's really scary.
Yeah, I know. We think they're really safe. And a lot of times the doctors, the plastic surgeons, don't always have all the information. And a lot of times, when women get diagnosed with breast cancer, the first thing they do is they go from the oncologist's office to the plastic surgeon's chair. So, and you're dealing with, wait a minute, I have cancer. Let's deal with cancer. So it can be a very tough issue, and it's such a personal issue. And it's an issue I never wanted to be a poster girl for. Imagine growing up, yes, I'd like to be a poster girl for boob jobs gone wrong. But
right.
Everything happens for a reason, and, you do the best you can.
Now, on your website, you do have a few favorite breast implant links with resources.
I do, and if you click on the In the Know segment, you can read other women in the industries. I started this group called In the Know, and it was women in the entertainment industry, Mariel Hemingway, myself, Sally Kirkland, and others, and we tell our own personal stories, and then there are symptoms and also links, so you can find out more information.
Well, that's wonderful. We do have your information on our Chit Chat Cafe Live website.
Great. I hope everybody goes and finds out. Yeah, go ahead.
Anything else new coming up with the Waltons now that it's the 40th anniversary?
Well, I produced a special, a look back at the show, retrospective, about a year and a half ago, and I'm planning to produce another 40-year Walton reunion, looking back at the show and the guest stars and, you know, fond memories of the show. So hopefully that'll come up this year. We'll have a Los Angeles reunion, I think, this summer, and who knows? There's so many things in the works for us for this year, given that it's our anniversary.
Well, that's exciting.
That is.
Yeah.
Well, Mary, we hope you'll come back again.
I would love to come back again.
With us.
I would love
to. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. I
thank
feel really
you.
Honored.
Next time we can talk about your body branding and getting comfortable with your skin.
Yeah.
We would love that. Our listeners would love that.
Yeah, we do a lot of shows on women's, you know, feeling better about yourself and just self-improvement. So,
sure, I would love to talk about that. I'd love to come there and do a workshop. So, you know what?
Absolutely.
It's all good. More to come.
Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks
I appreciate
so much
it.
For coming on our show.
I'll see you next time.
Okay,
good.
Sure. Bye.
Bye.
I'm here.
Oh, wait. Good night, Erin.
Good night, Lisa. Good night, Nancy. Good night,
Pat. Good night, Mary. Good night, Erin.
Bye, Mary. Good night, Mary.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, Lisa, how much fun can we have?
A lot.
A lot of fun. Oh, that was just delightful, and
She's
what a
sweetie.
Wonderful
what a
resource.
Sweet girl. What a nice
yep.
girl.
I love that we have her link on our website for all of you listeners. Check out our website. There's pictures and other information. It's just wonderful. Well, we're thanking our sponsors, Laura Geller Makeup, Intimacy Bras, and St. Croix Orthopedics. We have their links on our website as well. And we're also reminding everyone to enjoy our archives. Did anyone listen to the Davy Jones archive yet? That's our number one. Scroll down and find it and enjoy it. Stay tuned after this commercial. We're joined by Taya Kyle, wife of Navy SEAL Chris Kyle.
Now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live with your hosts, Nancy and Lisa.
Well, for those who know Lisa and I, we are such great supporters of our military. And speaking for myself, as a wonderful Catholic, every single day, the soldiers cross my lips in prayer, those who are serving now and those who have passed away. We are very honored to have Taya Kyle. She's the wife of Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, who's the author of American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in the U.S. military history. We applaud them, and we thank both Chris and Taya for their honor to our country. This is a book we could not put it down. once we first started to read it, and we highly recommend it to all of our listeners. Welcome to Chit Chat Cafe Live, Taya.
Thank you.
Oh, this book was amazing. I just felt like I was right there with Chris as he was writing, and then your parts would come in throughout the chapters, and we could read your words about what was going on.
I'm glad you liked it. Good. I'm glad you liked it.
I loved it. I must say that sometimes I like to start at the end for just a minute.
Okay.
Towards the end of the book, you write, "What I loved about Chris in the beginning was the way he unabashedly wore his heart on his sleeve. He didn't play games with my heart or my head." Is that what you clung to, Taya, during your deployment?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Chris is a really, really good man. He's, you know, one of a kind, and he definitely wears his heart on his sleeve. He is who he is. He's a humble, loving, good, funny man, and I feel very blessed to be with him.
Well, we feel like we know him personally after reading this book. We were with him for how many pages? And to all of our listeners, this book will leave you speechless. Taya, the raw account from Chris in his writing makes us feel like we were right there with him and with you. Now, everyone knows it's dangerous work for SEALs, and
yes,
you personally probably were not oblivious. What was it really like being alone, you know, with Chris on deployment? Did he call you often? Were you able to have contact?
Yeah, we felt very fortunate that we were able to be in contact through his deployments. It was sporadic and unplanned, but I know in past wars, people didn't always get to make phone calls and have emails, and so we felt very blessed to be able to do that as often as we could.
Just amazing. Would you be able to tell our listeners, maybe some don't know, what are SEALs and Special Forces?
Well, the SEALs, you know, they do air and land and sea, so I don't know if a lot of people know that they do all of that. And primarily in Iraq, they did do some ship takedowns, but they did a lot of urban warfare, and I think that they did more urban warfare in this war than they've done in the past.
I think you're right, and you can just picture the whole thing because we've seen it in movies and documentaries on the History Channel, but this book, it's just a true raw account of what Chris was feeling and what he was going through. And I love the book in the beginning when it talks about he learned a lot and had such admiration for his father and hunting and such respect. Were you also like that?
No, not at all. My dad definitely went hunting, and I was around it in that respect, but I never did. My dad invited me to go along, and it just wasn't something I was ever interested in to do myself. I mean, I always thought it was great that, you know, guys do that and have their guy time and get out in nature and all that, but no, I never did it personally.
Now, you're both from Texas?
No, I'm from the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, so how did you meet?
We met in a bar in San Diego. I was living in Long Beach at the time, and we just happened to meet out one night.
Wow. So was it love at first sight?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I thought he was very hot, and, you know, I was very attracted to him. I originally thought, you know, this guy is a SEAL, and there's really no future with a SEAL, but I definitely thought he was so nice and idealistic in so many ways, and he just had such a way about him that I was very, you know, attracted to him, but I certainly never would have imagined that I would ever get married to him.
Well, what
just
was
because of his job.
Exactly. And a lot of it, like in the book, it surprised me that I think he was telling his parents a lot of work that they do as SEALs, even their identity might be erased.
Yes, definitely. In fact, when I first met him, he did not tell me what he did. It took me a little bit of badgering to get him to admit that he was, in fact, a SEAL.
So how'd you get that information out of him?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I had a few cocktails in me, and I was maybe a little belligerent, and just kept pressing the point until he finally admitted it.
Oh, plus you're very lovely. We like your picture in the book.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Well, when he was deployed, did he ever promise to call you and perhaps could not call you or didn't? How did you feel about that?
Yeah, he definitely, in the beginning, would tell me, you know, I should be able to call you, you know, in a few days, or I should be able to call you tomorrow or something like that. And we quickly learned that pretty much most of the life that SEALs have, whether it's training or whether it's at war, it's really unpredictable. They can't promise much because things change so often. So in the end, we tried not to ever do that. I mean, he would say, look, I'll try, but I don't know. And I would just have to know that he would call when he could, and it might be days, it might be a week, you know, it might be a little bit more than that, but I just had to have faith that, you know, he'd call when he could.
Exactly. Now, my husband and my son do high adventure snowmobiling in the mountains in Canada a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they do their best when they get off of the mountain to sometimes just text me the letter K. And I know they're safe. Did you have anything like that, a little code that you would have?
No, we really didn't. Really the only contact he would have would be a phone call, maybe an email. So, you know, sometimes they were very brief, and it was just, you know, a minute or two if he had it, just to let me know he was okay. But we didn't necessarily have any sort of code.
Okay. What about when he would contact you? Would he want to share, or sometimes did he share stories that you didn't know you could handle listening to?
I think he was very cautious about telling me stories. He didn't want me to worry, and he didn't want me to necessarily know the danger that he would be in. But in time, I think he learned to try to tell me a little bit more, because it's hard enough to stay close and share when he has a job like that. I mean, certainly there were a lot of things he couldn't share, but as I always told him, my imagination was probably worse than anything he could tell me, and I really wanted to know anything at all that he could share. So he used his discretion to tell me enough to make me feel like I was close and knew a little bit about his life, but I know he also tried to protect me by not telling me some things, and that was a source of frustration, I think, throughout, because I knew he was trying to protect me, but I also wanted to be close to him. We were so far apart in distance. We were living in different worlds, and anything he could tell me, I wanted to know, and I gave him unconditional support. I really didn't care. You know, I didn't judge anything he would tell me, so I wanted to know everything.
Well, I love the book. Chris will write in bold print things that he's thinking about and talking about training and about different parts of his training as a SEAL. And then all of a sudden we'll be in bold print, Taya. So then we get to read Taya's words. Now I must share on page 113, I like Chris's quote. She got pregnant about the first time we kissed without protection. Childbirth.
Yep.
I love that. So
yep.
Honest, you know. And childbirth got complicated.
Yes.
Tell us about his reaction as a husband, of course, and father-to-be. What was he like? If he's such a tough guy, what was he like at that point of your life?
Well, the thing is, he is a tough guy when it comes to his job and when it comes to emotion and all of that. He can be very, very strong. In fact, I'm amazed often at how strong he is, and his ability to bounce back and forth between a quote-unquote normal life and then a life of war. But when it comes to our kids and me, he has the best heart, the softest heart for us. He's so supportive of me. He's a fun, fun dad. He's a fun husband. I mean, he's just incredibly loving and supportive. So it is an interesting mix. I mean, he has that side for us, even though he has a very, you know, tough side that he accesses in war.
And that's just how we picture Chris and you and your beautiful supportive relationship after reading this book, but I must ask, what is it like being married to the most lethal sniper in the U.S. military history?
Well, you know,
how do you find yourself thinking about what he does?
Well, I think, you know, going into it, I think Chris has said, you know, he didn't know if he'd be able to kill somebody or how that would go. And through the deployments, as he started realizing that every time he was able to take out somebody doing evil, and I think that's an important point. You know, Chris could never and did not ever pull the trigger on somebody who wasn't in the act of doing something evil. So, meaning even if you see a bad guy, you can't, and you saw him do something evil in the morning, if you saw that same guy in the afternoon and you know he's evil, you cannot take him out unless he's in the act of committing violence against American soldiers or, you know, innocent Iraqi civilians. So, you know, in that respect, I didn't necessarily look at him as, oh, a sniper or somebody who takes people out. I looked at him as a hero who was able to save other people's lives and get rid of some of these atrocious people. I mean, the stories of things that these, you know, bad guys, for lack of a better word or description, would do. I mean, we're talking rape of children, rape of women, beheadings, you know, just really, really evil people. So I looked at that and I thought, I'm proud of him. I'm proud of him that he's able to protect people that are just about to be killed themselves by these, you know, bad guys. So, that part never bothered me. I was proud of him, and I was so grateful that he was never taken out by one of them, you know, because he wasn't always just behind a rifle far away. I mean, that's part of his job, but they did assaults. They did, you know, capture and detain, you know, capture and kill for high-value targets. I mean, they did a lot of up-close and personal fighting, too. So, I don't mean to be too long-winded, but I just...
No, it's amazing.
Okay, good. Well, no, you know, it's just a very complex thing. So being married to him and knowing that side, I think mostly what I feel is just two things. Proud that he's able to make such an impact on a war against an evil people. And I feel incredibly grateful that, you know, he can do that and then he can come home and still be a loving man and a loving father and loving husband. I'm pretty much in awe of his ability to be both, and I think that's mostly because he has such a heart for the American people and such a heart for innocent people, and that, in his eyes, that was his job, is protecting people.
And we share your love and passion, and that's exactly how we felt about Chris and you after reading this book. And I love your quote. You are quoted in the book as saying, as far as I can see, if anyone who has a problem with what guys do over there is incapable of empathy.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm glad you liked that, because I definitely feel very strongly about that. I hear people, even, you know, some reporters who have said, I was there, you know, I was right beside those guys, and I can speak to what's right and wrong. And I feel like that's not really fair. I feel like unless you're the person who had your brother in arms die next to you, or in Chris's case, on top of you, how can you say you know what that's like? I mean, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine having my very best friend killed right next to me or shot next to me. And, you know, I can't imagine. So I feel it's really unfair for anybody to judge our guys who are over there in that kind of really ugly environment.
Exactly. Well, we're not married to people in the military, and we were so curious to hear your words more than even what was written in the book. And we are so supportive of you and Chris, and this book is just amazing. We could not put it down. So
I'm glad.
I loved it very much. I just have to let you know that.
Well, thank you. You know, it really is so nice to hear the support and to hear from people who really have a heart for the military and have a heart for all of these guys, because obviously, you know, Chris wrote this story, but one of his, he, you know, it was never his goal to write a story about himself. His goal was to use this opportunity to get people to understand what the families go through and to understand what military guys go through. I mean, I think he was just trying to describe more, you know, what it's like from different aspects, and to also highlight, you know, two of his brothers who died right next to him. I mean, there are so many guys who have lost their lives, but Ryan Jobe and Mark Lee were two of, you know, Chris's dearest friends and brothers, and I think he wanted to take that opportunity to highlight their sacrifice as well.
And I love that he dedicated the book to them also.
Yes. Yeah, me too.
Well, Lisa, I think, would like to ask you some questions too.
Okay, great.
Hi. You wrote in your book, you put, "I didn't fall in love with a freaking Navy SEAL. I thought I was depressed."
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, you know, it's true. I guess I've always felt that way, because it was almost like I fell in love with him in spite of the fact that he was a SEAL. I mean, I think it's such an honorable job, and I think it's amazing what these guys do and how capable they are and all that. I have a high level of respect for that. But I certainly didn't necessarily want to fall in love with someone that did that, because I knew there would be hardships and I knew it was not necessarily going to be an easy life. But I fell in love with, you know, Chris. He's just such a unique person in my mind, and he's just, you know, like I said, he's funny, he's bright, you know, he's incredibly loving and strong, and he brings so many wonderful things to my life that I had to be in love with him, you know. It just, so I guess the SEAL part was part of what was hard for me, you know, not what I was definitely attracted to.
Another thing you mentioned about family conflicts, saying that people talk about physical love when they come home from a long absence. I want to rip your clothes off. Is that how you
yes.
felt?
Well, you know, yes. When they're gone, you miss all parts of them, and definitely you think, oh, you know, you miss that physical part of them too. But for me, that was something that shocked me and surprised me and caused me some heartache, because when he would come home, I wanted, you know, that closeness with him. But in so many ways, I felt like we had to get to know each other again, because when he was away, he was in a totally different world than I was in. And I felt as though he was changing and becoming, you know, a warrior, and his life and his heart was with these guys and in a totally different place. And at the same time that he was going through all of that, you know, we had children and I was growing in a different way. I was learning what it was like to be a mother and what it was like to, you know, I went through different changes too, you know, leaving a career and forging friendships in a town that we hadn't lived in very long. And I felt like I created one world and he was creating another, and he would come back and it was like, I just felt like we need to get to know each other again. And I felt like that was an awkward, very difficult part of his deployment, because when you're there in the flesh, you're very aware of the fact that, wow, you've both been through so much and you've been through a part and you haven't gotten to talk much. I mean, we would talk in short spurts, but right. certainly not in any detail about what he was doing. Some of it he wasn't able to talk about, certainly not over the telephone. And, you know, there wasn't time for me to tell him everything I was going through or our kids were going through. And so I found that to be challenging.
Did you feel like, because you probably got into a routine when he was away, did it take a while to get adjusted to him being back home, having the
Definitely.
Other person in the home? And
yeah, definitely. I think most military spouses feel that way. I mean, I guess I want to emphasize that too. I'm sharing my experiences, but I certainly feel that there are so many wonderful, you know, military relationships that are surviving and out there. And I think most of them go through that. You know, when they come home, you have to readjust, because you've been raising the children by yourself and you've been maintaining a home by yourself. And yet when they come back, they need to feel a part of things, and they need to feel respected, and they need to feel like they matter. And it's definitely a challenge to work them back into the mix, especially when they're going to be gone again. And in the case of SEALs, I can't speak to other branches, but with SEALs, when they come home from a deployment, they're not really home. I mean, he might get a couple of weeks home, but then he's often whisked off to another training. They're gone on deployments, they come home, but then their training is constant and it's across the country. So they're really not, you know, they're home for a few weeks and they're gone again. So it's kind of hard to say, okay, you're here and we respect you and we love you and integrate yourself, knowing that you're just going to leave again in 2 weeks, you know?
Now, what, did you have any confrontations when he came home? Did you fight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we definitely did. That's not something that, you know, we're proud of by any means, but,
well, it's not very normal.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you're bound to have, I probably, if you're not arguing some, you probably aren't communicating, because I just don't, I don't know very many people that can make those adjustments without, you know, passionate feelings being expressed. And, you know, it's an unfortunate byproduct of war and deployments, I guess.
Now, was being a Navy SEAL more important to Chris than being a father or husband? How did you feel when he reenlisted?
Yeah, it was. And it hurt. I mean, I definitely wanted to support him, and I definitely wanted to support his dreams. I think most wives want to support their husband's dreams, and but there's such a deep relationship with your fellow SEALs, and I've come to understand, respect, and appreciate that, and I know that that's how it has to be. But when they go through such extreme experiences together, and they're living and dying for each other, and then, you know, they're, like I said, they come home from deployment, but then they leave again together. They live together in a different world. And I started to see through time that they really were his family and they really were his priority. And there was a time when, you know, it would come up where there was a question, should he deploy or not? And Chris would tell me, you're the most important thing in the world to me. And those were wonderful words to hear. But when it came time to choose, you know, his choice and his heart was with them. And, you know, I get it now. At the time, it was very, very difficult, because I think every woman wants to feel like, you know, she's a priority and her children are a priority. But,
sure.
And I think honestly, they were close to equal. But when, you know, when push came to shove, his choice was with them. And it's understandable. He's very patriotic and he loves this country. And he felt if he's an able-bodied man who can help in the fight, he wanted to be there and he felt it was his duty. So I can really appreciate where he was coming from, you know, but the emotional side, it hurts, because he knew that it was hard for us and he knew there was great sacrifice. And you know, not just because he was gone, but because he was in harm's way. I mean, like I said, it wasn't just from the safety of a, you know, the sniper rifle yards away. I mean, that was some of his job, but a lot of his job was, I mean, we're talking pistols and close range fighting and being shot at and being hit and people dying. And, you know, a lot of me felt like I wanted him to value his own life and I wanted him to value our lives, because I felt like without him, our lives would be, I mean, certainly not over, but that part of our lives would be horrifyingly dead. I mean, I really felt like I wanted that to be more important to him, but I do understand his patriotism and I do understand his sense of duty, and I understand the bond that he had with those guys is to this day unbreakable. And to this day, it hurts him not to be out there serving, and it hurts him not to be with them and, you know, in the fight, protecting America, protecting Americans. You know, it's tough.
Right. Well, Taya, in the book, many times, Chris starts off, first of all, in Chapter 1, talking about his priorities, God, country, family. And later on, you both talk about, should it be God, family, country? And Lisa and I would both like to say, we think both are great, and we applaud you. We have tears streaming down our cheeks right now. In thankfulness and honor to both of you for writing this book and for both of you serving our country.
Thank you so much. That really does mean
Thank
a lot.
You.
I really appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy
and
New Year to you.
Join us again sometime.
Anytime. Thank you.
We could talk about other things that are fun, too.
I'm sure we could.
So, Taya, thank you very much. And
our listeners can find the link on our website to purchase this amazing book. Say hi to Chris for us and your children.
I definitely will. Thank you so much.
Well, God bless you. Bye.
Good night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'd like everyone to know that I read this book in 2 days. I could not put it down. I was supposed to be cooking dinner. I did not.
Very interesting, yeah.
It was beautiful.
Very interesting
lady. Yes. Ah. Well, we're thanking our fabulous sponsors, Laura Geller Makeup, Intimacy Bras, and St. Croix Orthopedics. We're also thanking our wonderful producer, Corey King. You can enjoy his Corey King Show Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Artists First.
And don't forget to listen to our archives. We had very, 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 very cool guests. You can listen to our interview with Melania Trump, Davy Jones. We had Dr. Jennifer Berman. We had Priscilla Presley. So just go to our archives, scroll down to the show you'd like to listen to, click on the date, and you can listen to our, you know, past shows.
And thanking our guests, Mary McDonough and Taya Kyle. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And I'm praying for peace in the world. I'm leaving you with that.
Good night,
on this
everyone.
Happy New Year first night back. So good night, everyone.
Good night.